Okay, so we did the extrinsic muscles of the hand, of course, which told us that these muscles do originate in the forearm and then their tendons travel down to the hand, and which means the majority of muscles that affect the hand don't live in the hand. Their tendons go through. But there are some muscles that do exist in the hand that have particular actions to them. So because they do sit within the hand, we call them intrinsic muscles, and of course, quite a number of them are for pollicis because the thumb tends to have its own thing. So when we look at the intrinsic muscles of the hand, we usually divide them into three compartments: the thenar eminence group, the hypothenar eminence group, and the central. So where's the thenar eminence? Thumb, hypothenar is in little finger, and then central. So kind of divide them up that way is that when we look at them, they're either hyperthenar, hypothenar, or central. The muscles move the fingers and the thumb, and they are completely located in the hand. So they're within the hand. So we've left the forearm. We're now directly in the hand itself. Now, because of the rotational development of the thumb embryologically, so not unlike the hip, I think I've told you guys this before, right? The reason why your big toe is medial and your thumb is lateral is because when you develop inside mom, the femur actually rotates to lock into the hip joint. So you're going to discover that things like dermatomal patterns for the lumbar nerves, they all wrap around the leg. So the nervous system is created very early inside mom, and then the bones and the muscles of the leg, for example, they'll continue to mature, and at a certain point, because inside mom there is a point where the great toe is outside, like the thumb, but then the femur internally rotates and locks into the hip joint. Okay? So this is why we say, you know, it's rotated. The thumb does the same thing. The thumb, the way it sort of sits embryologically, it eventually rotates into where it sits. So we say, because of the rotational development of the thumb embryologically, the named actions of flexion and extension of the thumb occur within the frontal plane, not sagittal, and ABA deduction occur in the sagittal plane. So we talked a bit about that last week, right? So this is AB, AD. Oh, sorry. This is AB, AD, AB. This is flexion. This is extension, right?
Is that the opposite?
I do the opposite. Okay. AB and AD deduction occurs within the sagittal plane. So that means this is AB deduction, AD deduction. This is flexion, this is extension. Is that not what I said? Apologies. Okay, so this is AD, this is AB, this is flexion, this is extension. No, we're talking the metacarpophalangeal joint. This is flexion, that is correct, and this is extension when we're dealing with the thumb at the interphalangeal joint. That is flexion, that is extension. But when we're dealing with the metacarpophalangeal joint, AD, AB, flexion, and extension. And Sarah and I have argued about this because it's true. Okay, right? Flexion and extension occur within the frontal plane, right? Anatomical position, frontal plane, and AB and AD deduction occur in the sagittal plane. Because the thumb rotates in, it changes it. But when we're dealing with the interphalangeal joint, that is flexion. This is not adduction. What is this? Opposition, correct. And this is reposition. Opposition, reposition. It is. This is flexion. And then when you do this, when you internally rotate and come across, remember we had external and internal rotators of the thumb, of the pollicis, it internally rotates to come across to here. This is opposition. But this is flexion and this is extension. That is correct. Yep. Okay. Are they talking bad about me? Okay. Now, We're going to talk a little bit about this dorsal digital expansion because it really plays a much more significant role in intrinsic muscles as extrinsic. If we remember, right, what muscle was related to the dorsal digital expansion that we've taken so far? Extensor digitorum, correct, right? So the tendon only came down so far, and then to via the dorsal digital expansion, it went all the way to the distal flange, correct? Okay, all right, so this is the attachment site for lumbricals, palmar interossei, dorsal interossei, and abductor digiti minimi. So more muscles utilize this dorsal digital expansion to its advantage when it moves the fingers. They, though, attach from the expansion from the sides. So where extensor digitorum comes all the way straight down on the dorsal surface of the fingers to this dorsal digital expansion, ending up in the distal flange, these intrinsic muscles attach to the DDE like from the sides and attach onto it. But even though they do, they're going to affect the DIP, right? Because it crosses over to the distal flange. So this is the fibrous aponeurotic expansion of the distal attachment of extensor digitorum muscle on fingers 2 to 5, and it serves as a movable hood when the fingers flex and extend. So you can see here is digitorum, extensor digitorum here, and it comes into the central slip, coming to the middle flange, and then these lateral bands off of this hood come all the way to the distal flange, and this is why, because of this configuration, then we can have this extension all the way to the at the DIP. You can see here one of the muscles we'll be taking are called the lumbricals, and you can see it comes from the lateral aspect up onto the hood of this dorsal digital expansion. So we can see here in this picture, it's a little bit better. Here's the central slip of the DDE, and then we can see this sort of surrounds the whole sort of dorsal surface of the finger going all the way out to the distal flange. And we can see here is the second and the second lumbrical, the second dorsal interosseous, and you see how they both utilize this DDE to its advantage to affect the fingers distally, okay? So the expansion starts on the dorsal, lateral, and medial sides of the proximal phalanx of each finger, and from there it attaches to the dorsal surface of the middle and distal phalanges. Any muscle that attaches to the DDE can create extension at the interphalangeal joints, both PIP and DIP, just simply because of the DDE, okay? I say DDE because it's hard to say every time. Dorsal digital expansion. Try saying that fast 3 or 4 times. Now, there is a dorsal digital expansion at the thumb that's formed by the distal tendon of extensor pollicis longus, which, of course, is one of the extrinsic muscles. So there is a slight one in the thumb as well. All right, so keeping that in mind then, we're going to start talking about these particular muscles. So when we're talking about the thenar eminence group, what likely are the muscles in this area going to affect? Pollicis, right, the thumb. So we can see them here in the diagram first. You know, we've got quite a large number of muscles in here, hence the reason why the thenar eminence is as large as it is, because there's a lot of musculature in there, all right? So abductor pollicis brevis. Now it's going to make sense why abduction is what it is. It attaches from the flexor retinaculum. Where's that? The roof of the carpal tunnel, right? So it attaches onto that. The tubercle of the scaphoid, which is, of course, what the flexor retinaculum also finds attachment on. And the tubercle of the trapezium to the radial side of the base of the proximal phalanx and the dorsal digital expansion of the thumb. So let's think about that. Where is the radial side of the proximal phalanx? Now, we have to go back to the anatomical position. So the radial side would be what you would consider to be kind of the lateral side, correct? Right, the radial side, right, coming off to the lateral side. So you've got to get back into that anatomical position, okay? This muscle crosses the first carpal metacarpal joint of the thumb anteriorly to the proximal phalanx. So let's think about that. It crosses the first carpal metacarpal joint anteriorly to the proximal phalanx. Got that? It therefore it pulls the metacarpal of the thumb within the sagittal plane that is perpendicular to and away from the plane of the palm, which results in abduction of the thumb, which is its primary action. Again, look at your hand where it is. So this muscle is coming back to the proximal phalanx, right? It's coming from here and coming back to the proximal phalanx. So if you do the vector of movement, right, here the flexor retinaculum and the thumb in the anatomical position, you can see how it pulls the thumb this way. So just take your index finger on your proximal phalanx, put your fingers on the thenar eminence, and resist that abduction that's occurring, right? You can feel it just pops right out, right? Okay, so that's what it does because of its attachment. It reaches up and kind of back to the proximal phalanx. It crosses the metacarpophalangeal joint of the thumb medially, thus pulling the proximal phalanx of the thumb in an ulnar direction within the plane of the palm towards the index finger, which results in flexion of the thumb. So it abducts and flexes. Again, because of that angle of traveling laterally out to the thumb. So it's an abductor and a flexor, right? Flexion of the thumb, it flexes the thumb at the metacarpophalangeal joint, like the metacarpophalangeal joint, of course, is here, correct? Right? So that would be flexion. So it's abductor and flexion. It's hard to do that and not flex your distal phalanx. Okay? It crosses the first carpometacarpal joint radially, thus pulling the metacarpal of the thumb in a radial direction within the plane of the thumb away from the index finger, which results in extension. So it does this, this, and this. Because the way it reaches around behind. Okay? Innervation, median nerve, C8-T1. Muscle test is on Kendall and the strength and strength thing we'll get to in a minute. It's kind of interesting how, you know, we're getting down in the hand, so now we're getting down into spinal segments. So no longer we're at the very end. Remember, C8, really, you call it C, but there's no C8 vertebra, correct? So now we're below C7. Sorry, above C7 and below T8, T1, right? Okay, so we're getting down in the segment. So we can see it's here in this area. You can see the flexor retinaculum here. You can see how it attaches onto that radial side of the first. And this is where, again, you work with what you just did. You'll see that it kind of pops out for you. To stretch it is extension and what? Adduction, correct? Strengthening it, you can use a rubber tubing or just an elastic band to strengthen this as well. So that was abductor pollicis brevis. So now we have flexor pollicis brevis. It runs from the flexor retinaculum as well and the trapezium to the radial side of the base of the proximal phalanx of the thumb. So when we go back to... Why is that not working? That's kind of weird. I don't know what I did there. They're somehow walking. That's kind of weird. There we go. Weird. Okay. So abductor was the flexor retinaculum to the base of the proximal phalanx and the dorsal digital expansion. Brevis, flexor brevis, flexor retinaculum, trapezium, to the base of the proximal phalanx of the thumb. Doesn't go into the flexor retinaculum, okay? It crosses the carpal metacarpal joint at the ulnar side, which pulls the metacarpal of the thumb in an ulnar direction within the plane of the palm towards the index finger, which, of course, is flexion. Okay, so we're not talking abduction here because its position is doing this, which is flexion of the thumb. This muscle crosses the metacarpophalangeal joint medially, therefore it flexes the thumb by flexing the proximal phalanx and metacarpophalangeal joint. So it does this, but it also does that. So it does this, and it also does that. Okay. This muscle crosses the carpometacarpal joint of the thumb anteriorly, which results in pulling the metacarpal of the thumb within the sagittal plane that is perpendicular to and away from the palm of the hand, which of course is abduction, but it's not its primary action. Abductor pollicis' primary action is abduction. Flexor pollicis brevis, its major, of course, is flexion and does assist in abduction. Its innervation there are kind of two heads here. The superficial head is the median nerve. Ulnar head is nerves C8-T1. So we can see here how we have this. There's a couple of different heads here, but I don't get into that too much. I won't ask you a question on the two heads for an exam purposes. But you can see here is abductor pollicis brevis here, and then flexor pollicis brevis. You can see how it doesn't, in sort of as its major action, do abduction, but it does obviously flexion because of where it attaches to. Okay, stretching is there, strengthening kind of the rubber tubing again. Now, opponent's pollicis. So when we brought the thumb to the little finger, we said that was opposition, correct? So this attaches from the flexor retinaculum and the tubercle, the trapezium, and it goes to the anterior surface and radial border of the first metacarpal. So it doesn't go to the flange, right? This just goes to the metacarpal. Same idea, radial side, right? The radial side and anterior. So opposition is what's called a triplanar oblique movement, which involves flexion, medial rotation, and abduction of the metacarpal. So it's tiny, but think about it. Does three things have to happen to oppose? Flexion, abduction, and medial rotation. All three need to occur in order to get the two pads to touch each other, whether it's the fifth finger, the fourth, or whatever it may be. Okay? So it does all three. So this muscle crosses the first carpometacarpal joint medially, resulting in pulling the metacarpal of the thumb in an ulnar direction within the plane of the palm towards the index finger, which of course then is flexion of the thumb as we know, right? So pulling the thumb towards the index finger on the plane of the thumb, which would be the frontal plane, that would be flexion, primary action. This muscle also crosses the first carpometacarpal joint medially, thus pulling the metacarpal of the thumb in an ulnar direction within the plane of the palm towards the index finger, which is flexion. It also crosses the first carpometacarpal joint on the anterior side from slightly medial on the flexor retinaculum, so we've got to think about where it's coming from, okay, to detach more laterally onto the metacarpal of the thumb. Now, because it's kind of coming from the flexor retinaculum, it kind of comes around and grabs like that. So it does sort of come around that metacarpal bone, right? So it comes from the flexor retinaculum and just a little bit around and grabs. Therefore, because it sort of wraps ever so slightly around the metacarpal, okay, it results in rotation, rotating towards the little finger, which is medial rotation. So it comes around and it kind of just grabs around that first metacarpal. Make sense? So therefore, of course, it's going to have allow for some medial rotation. It also crosses the first carpometacarpal joint anteriorly detached onto the metacarpal, and it pulls the metacarpal within the sagittal plane. Of course, that is perpendicular to and away from the plane of the palm, which is abduction. So this muscle does everything for opposition, flexion, abduction, and medial rotation, which are the three things that must happen in order for opposition to occur. Everybody follow that? Right? Flexion, abduction, and internal rotation, and you need all three in order to have opposition. And this muscle, the reason why it's called opponent's pollicis, is because it does all three movements which allow for opposition. Right? Okay? Make sense? Everybody's like, thank God this wasn't on the midterm. Yes, you will. Yay! Innervation, median, and ulnar nerves, C8 and T1. So we can see here, you see how it wraps around a little bit, hence the medial rotation and the flexion because it's reaching across from median to lateral, and abduction because it's slightly reaching back to get to that lateral aspect of the first metacarpal, right? All three movements. So thumb opposition we can see there, and of course we just do the exact opposite, would be extension, adduction, and lateral rotation. I don't have to worry too much about it, but which would also stretch the thumb as far as that goes. Okay, so that's the thenar group. That's all about the thumb. Right. Now we have the hypothenar group, so we're on the other side, so we're dealing with the little finger, finger number five. Okay, so out into this area right here. Okay, so abductor digiti minimi manus. Manus means hand, because there is a digiti minimi in the toe area, okay? Because someone just said to me earlier, they were looking ahead a little bit, and all the muscles are kind of same, similar, right? So what we're going to see is abductor digiti minimi manus means hand, and abductor digiti minimi pedis means foot. Okay, so it's one of the ways we kind of associate differently with them. So manus represents hand. So it attaches from the pisiform and the tendon of the flexor carpi ulnaris. And the flexor carpi ulnaris, we remember, does not run under the carpal tunnel, correct? Right? Runs through it, kind of, sort of. So the pisiform tendon of flexor carpi ulnaris, and it goes to the ulnar side of the base of the proximal phalanx and the dorsal digital expansion of the fifth. So again, get in that anatomical position. Think of where you're going to. So when we talk about the ulnar side of the base of the proximal phalanx. So the proximal phalanx would be in this area right here, correct? So it comes across from the pisiform and the tendon of flexor carpi ulnaris to the ulnar side of the base of the fifth. And because it comes around to the side, it does grab onto the dorsal digital expansion. So you can kind of see it here, where it's going to come onto this aspect of the dorsal digital expansion. So we can see it coming off here. It does share a bit of the tendon of flexor carpi ulnaris, comes around through and out onto the ulnar side, onto the dorsal digital expansion. So because it does that, we have to think it's crossed a couple of joints here. The first, this muscle crosses the carpal metacarpal joint and the metacarpal phalangeal joint to the fifth medially, so that when contracting, it pulls the fifth metacarpal and proximal phalanx medially into abduction. In other words, when we're in opposition, we know that we've got muscles that pull the thumb back. This muscle also is responsible for pulling the little finger back into reposition. Okay? So from opposition to reposition. So I'll repeat. It crosses the carpal metacarpal joint and the metacarpal phalangeal joints of the fifth medially. And when contracting, it pulls the fifth metacarpal and proximal phalanx medially into abduction. You get confused sometimes, and that's why I keep saying it. You got to orient to the anatomical position so that you recognize that the little finger lies medial. So it's coming out here, so therefore it's on the medial side, right? Sometimes you use the ulnar side, but here we're talking the medial side. And again, getting that hand into that anatomical position, so that's why it's pulling away. It's repositioning the little finger. It crosses the metacarpal phalangeal joint anteriorly, which results in deflection at the metacarpal phalangeal joint. So it does this, okay, at the metacarpal phalangeal joint. And it attaches to the dorsal digital expansion, which crosses the pip and the dip on the posterior side, which results in extension of the middle and distal phalanges and the pips and dips. So it does this, and it does that, the exact opposite of all the other movements. So repositions, flexes, and at the pip and dip, because of the DDE, it extends. Dear God. What's that?
I said yes.
Yeah. Just remember, with that DDE, any tendon that attaches to the dorsal digital expansion will result in extension at the pip and the dip. Just remember that. So as soon as you say that that muscle attaches to the DDE, you know it's going to extend the pip and dip. Okay? Just put that in big letters in your bedroom somewhere when you're studying or something to remind yourself. Okay? Innervation, now we're into the ulnar nerve, CAT1. So stretching it, of course, would be the exact opposite of everything. And you can get these little sheets of surgical stuff that does help with it. Most of you will say, yeah, when I've done this, I'm never working on hands. Okay, so that was abductor digiti minimi, manus. Now we have flexor digiti minimi manus. This arises from the flexor retinaculum, but now we're on the medial side of the flexor retinaculum, right? Pollicis, we were looking at the lateral side of the flexor retinaculum. Now we're looking at the median. So the flexor retinaculum, a hook of hamate, which of course is an attachment site for the flexor retinaculum as well, to the anterior ulnar side of the base of the proximal phalanx. So let's think about that for a minute. Flexor retinaculum, hook of hamate, anterior ulnar side of the base of the proximal phalanx. So hook of hamate, pisiform, and coming out here to the ulnar side, base of the proximal phalanx. Little tiny muscle from here to there, right? Again, anatomical position, okay? Like that. Because it crosses the MCP joint of the little finger anteriorly, this results in flexion at the metacarpal phalangeal joint, proximal phalanx. So it does that, right? Metacarpal phalangeal joint. So it does that. Because it crosses the CMC joint, the carpal metacarpal joint, anteriorly, this results in flexion at the carpal metacarpal joint. Now, this is a muscle that does this. So when we're into opposition, right? So we're into opposition, okay? When we're able to push the pad of the little finger towards the pad of the thumb, this muscle is doing that, okay? Or whether it's even, you know, the fourth finger, if you wish to. So when we pinch, we're using this muscle, which moves the fifth finger in, pushes the pad against the pad of the thumb. Okay? Innervation, ulnar nerve C8-T1. So we can see it here from hook of hamate, pisiform area here, coming out into this ulnar side or this medial side of the base of the first flange. We can see here we've got, here's avductor digiti minimi manus, and of course then we've coming on to the dorsal digital expansion, therefore we get, you know, the movements of the pips and dip. But we don't get that with flexor digiti minimi because it just crosses onto the base of the proximal phalanx, so therefore we get movement occurring, all of it, most of it here, and then again this specialty movement of pushing the pad of the little finger against the pad of the thumb. It does not. Okay. We can see here, so just extension pulling back and pulling away will stretch this muscle. No. Right. Okay. I don't think it does. No, it's okay. It's okay. Okay. So we had opponens pollicis manus. Now we have opponens digiti minimi. We don't call it manus because there is no corresponding muscle in the foot because we can't oppose our big toe and our little toe, okay? Maybe we could when we were... Yeah, we see little babies, they can do things with their toes that are quite amazing. So this opponens digiti minimi arises from the flexor retinaculum and the hook of the hamate to the anterior surface and ulnar border of the fifth. Anterior surface and ulnar border of the fifth. So you see it's coming similar to what we just saw in flexor digiti minimi, flexor retinaculum, hook of the hamate. This goes to the anterior ulnar side of the base of the proximal phalanx, whereas this one goes to the fifth metacarpal. Okay, this doesn't go out to the phalanx, right? So it just goes from the retinaculum and flexor retinaculum, the hook of the hamate, and it goes to the anterior surface and ulnar border of the fifth metacarpal. It doesn't get out to the phalanges or up to the phalanges, all right? So because it does that, it opposes the little finger at the carpal metacarpal joint, and this is not a specific cardinal plane action. We just say it opposes, so it brings it over. It does cross the fifth carpal metacarpal joint anteriorly, which does help result in flexion of that carpal phalangeal joint, right? Metacarpal phalangeal joint, the carpal metacarpal joint, sorry. Then the muscle crosses the carpal metacarpal joint anteriorly from slightly more lateral on the flexor retinaculum to attach more medially onto the metacarpal, and this results into lateral rotation of the fifth. So you have medial rotation of the first going into opposition, right? Remember it was flexion, abduction, and medial rotation. In the little finger, we have lateral rotation occurring that brings the pad of the fifth to face the pad of the first. So medial rotation of the first, lateral rotation of the fifth. Again, get your hand in the anatomical position, it makes more sense. Get it around, you can figure out why you get medial on the first, lateral on the fifth. Okay? This muscle also crosses the carbometacarpal joint anteriorly from lateral at the wrist to medially onto the metacarpal, which results in adduction. Now, we have to remember that, you know, when we looked at the thumb, AB and adduction was different because of the twist. But when we're dealing with the fingers, this is abduction and this is adduction. And what you would intuitively say, well, that's correct, right? AB, AD. Okay? So what we're saying is, because of where it goes here, you can see how, because it goes from medial to lateral, it would adduct, help adduct a little bit, right? Okay. So we can see the stretch here, it's pretty straightforward. And look at there's, now, to test this muscle, it's kind of interesting. The client is requested to oppose the little finger towards the thumb. The practitioner intercepts the action by placing fingers in a space between the little finger and the thumb. So they're moving towards and you take up the space with your thumb. A counter resistance is applied, driving the opponent's digiti minimi away from the thumb. And of course, the client is asked to maintain opposition against the resistance. So the test is that you would grab the little finger as, that's partially on its way to opposition and try to push it back into reposition. Okay? I'm not sure if that's what the book says, but this is a far easier way to do it. Right, so we've done the hyper, we've done the hypo. Now we go into the middle, known as the central compartment. So we can see here that you know, some of the muscles we've talked about already, well, we can see that there's filling in here. Anybody here done any work between the metacarpals in lab yet? Okay, so you know, quite often some of you may have some discomfort there. So if you, you know, just take your thumb and finger and push it between the metacarpals, you might find you have some trigger points and stuff. So if you come in like that, feel it a bit, not too bad, good. And here in the fifth, not too bad. Okay, so you know, on the dorsal surface, you can see those metacarpals, and you get in down in between them. This is where you're getting into. Okay, so. Adductor pollicis. So we're on the lateral side now. Adduction is a muscle that brings the thumb back towards the frontal plane, correct? Okay? There's two heads on this muscle. We can see them here. We've got two heads. We've got the oblique head here, and we have the transverse head, which makes up a fair amount here. You can see, I like this kind of picture for any other reason. It doesn't show the muscles, but it shows the position and its relationship to movement. It makes it look a lot better when you can understand, right, here's adductor pollicis here. You can see where you take it's just its pure attachments, and you can see how, you know, attachments always work going to closer together, right, when muscle contracts. You can kind of see how they all work. I think you can find these kind of maps online if it helps you all to get a sense of the attachments and how they would pull, okay? So, the oblique head arises from the anterior bases of the second and third metacarpals and capitate. Remember, the bases are proximal. So if we look at the metacarpals, the anterior bases of the second and third metacarpals. The anterior bases of the third and second metacarpals and capitate. To the medial side of the base of the proximal phalanx and dorsal digital expansion of the thumb. So in your mind's eye, anterior bases of the second and third metacarpals, anterior bases of the second and third metacarpals, right? Okay. And the capitate, which is, you know, carpal in that area, and goes to the medial side of the base of the proximal phalanx and dorsal digital expansion of the thumb. So the proximal phalanx was there, and it's on the medial side in the anatomical position. So we're talking over here, right? So we've got the second and third metacarpals, and the bases are close to the carpals, correct? Okay, so we've got the, we think of our two metacarpals, second and third here. They come down here onto the proximal row, right? So we're saying the bases of the second and third and the capitate, right? And goes to the medial side of the base of the proximal phalanx, which is, of course, would be here, correct? So sort of in this triangle here to the base, medial side base of the first metacarpal, okay? And to the dorsal digital expansion, which tells you right away, what does it do? Extends the intercarpal joint of the thumb between the proximal and the distal phalanges, correct? Okay. So this muscle crosses the carpal metacarpal joint of the thumb posteriorly from posterior medially on the palm to the anterior laterally onto the thumb. When the thumb is first in a position of abduction, this muscle contracts. It pulls the thumb posteriorly, perpendicularly towards the plane of the thumb, which results in adduction of the thumb. So it takes a thumb that's here and pulls it back into adduction. So it works when the, it is, because, you know, we can only go this far in adduction, correct? Maybe just a little bit past. Yeah, except for you. But if it's in adduction, this is the muscle that gets it back to that position, okay? This muscle crosses the first carpal metacarpal joint from medially on the hand to more laterally onto the metacarpal of the thumb, medial on the hand to more lateral, which results in pulling the thumb medially within the plane of the palm towards the third metacarpal, plane of the palm towards the third metacarpal, and we know that as flexion, correct? Right, so it causes flexion of the thumb. It also crosses the first metacarpal phalangeal joint of the thumb medially, which results in flexing the proximal phalanx of the thumb, which is that, not the distal here. Hard to do just it by itself, isn't it? Right, just that. Because of the attachment to the dorsal digital expansion, of course, it extends the thumb at the interphalangeal joint between the proximal and distal phalanges. Innervation is ulnar nerve C8T1. You seeing a trend on innervation here? Right? Pretty common innervation. So we can see here how it comes across and attaches. And again, you have this. So here's your, you know, we're into this adductor pollicis. As you can see, here's your two heads here, your oblique head and your transverse head, coming onto this area here, okay? Stretching it out, of course, would be the opposite movements, either way you want to do it. And again, these little rubber bands will help with strengthening the movement if you need to, right, in terms of what it does. Lumbricals manus. So we can see here, these are very interesting muscles. They have these, I've got flexor digitorum profundus kind of running through here, which, of course, go to this dorsal digital expansion. And we can see these lumbricals kind of filling in the spaces. So think, again, when you push between your metacarpals, you have these fleshy areas in between, right? One of the muscles we'll find in this fleshy area are the lumbricals. So the attachments are onto the distal tendons of flexor digitorum profundus. Remember, flexor digitorum profundus goes all the way to the distal phalange, correct? Okay, so flexor. One arises from the radial side of the tendon of the index finger. Radial side of the tendon of the index finger. Let's think about that. Okay, so think of your metacarpal, right, and the radial side in the anatomical position. So metacarpal, so it would be out here, right? Out here. Again, anatomical position, right, out here. Okay, radial side of the tendon of the index finger. Two arises from the radial side of the tendon of the middle finger. Radial side of the tendon of the middle finger, okay. Three arises from the ulnar side of the tendon of the middle finger and the radial side of the tendon of the ring finger. So it attaches on to this side of the third and this side of the fourth. this side of the third, and this side of the fourth. I'm slowing down here on purpose. This side of the third, and this side of the fourth. Okay, and that would be the third lumbrical. And then the fourth arises from the ulnar side of the third and the radial side of the fifth. So one and two have one attachment. One arises from the radial side of the index finger, number two. Two arises on the radial side of the middle finger. Three arises from both the third and the fourth. And four arises from both the fourth and the fifth. So when you look at the diagram, you can see here, first arises from the radial side, second arise of the second, the second lumbrical arises from the radial side of the middle finger, the fourth arises from the medial side of the third or the ring of the middle finger, and the lateral side of the ring finger. So you can see it finds attachments on both sides here. And the fifth arises from both sides here. Nothing on the medial aspect of the fifth, but arising here. And remember, you can see it's the tendons, right? Let's remember that, okay? We can see our distal tendons. So we're not talking a bony attachment here. We're talking tendons of flexor digitorum profundus. Okay, so you can see here in the diagram, it's arising from the tendons here, not from bones. Okay? Everybody got that? And you understand how it's medial and lateral. The first and the second lumbricals attach just on one side of the tendon, and the fourth and the fifth attach on two sides of their tendon. Kind of in the middle. It's right in between the metacarpals, yeah. Right? Okay? Because if you palpate the central compartment of your hand, you know, the hypothenar and the hyperthenar, you can feel, you know, fleshy muscles in there. But if you get right into the central and you get in deep enough, you can actually feel the metacarpals, right? So these muscles lie right between the metacarpals with this attachment on the flexor profundus, okay? One goes into the tendon of the index finger, two into the tendon of the middle finger, three into the tendon of the ring finger, and four into the tendon of the little finger. So we can see here that they go up onto the tendons here, okay? It's not drawn well here, but you can kind of see them here. So with that in mind, by attaching onto the tendons of extensor digitorum, and they're after the MCP joint but before the IP joints, so it's after the metacarpophalangeal joints and before the interphalangeal joints, these muscles exert their pull on the distal attachments of extensor digitorum, which is, of course, the distal phalanges of 2 to 5. Because remember, right, that when we go back here, digitorum profundus was the only muscle that went all the way out to the distal phalange, right? Okay, so when we look here, we're saying, because it crosses the interphalangeal joints, and because they're related to extensor digitorum profundus, it crosses the pip and dip posteriorly, which extends the distal phalanges at the DIP joints through 2 to 5. So it is an extensor of the distal tips, the lumbricals, okay? Every time I have a class, people call me all the time. These muscles also cross the metacarpophalangeal joints of 2 to 5 anteriorly, which results in flexion of the proximal phalanges of the MCP joints. Oh, my goodness. So because it goes back to the dorsal digital expansions, it extends the tip of the fingers, but because of their position of going anteriorly onto the metacarpophalangeal joints of 2 to 5, you get flexion of the proximal phalange at the metacarpophalangeal joint. This and this. Okay? And it's all because of the DDE. They cross the metacarpal joint of each finger on the radial side, which allows each muscle to abduct or adduct the fingers based on its attachment. So when you look at the diagrams here, you can see how, you know, this is going to be an abductor. This can do both. This will be an abductor. When we look at abduction and adduction of the hands, it's this line right here. Okay, so we're moving away. Okay, so this is abduction. This is adduction. So all has to do where their positions are and which way they're moving. You can kind of see it here, right? Anything like this will strengthen it. This kind of work will do a little bit of it. And again, just pushing back here in terms of the using the tips of the fingers and extension, you will stretch these lumbricals as well. The last ones, the palmar interossei. The reason they're called that is because they sit in here a little bit different. So if we look at this diagram here, and we can see where these palmar interossei are, and then we can go back here to this diagram and see where the lumbricals are, right? They sit just a little bit different, but again, they're within these metacarpal bones, okay? I see everybody's looking at the clock like, oh my God, can he please get done? Okay, all right. So the palmar interossei, their attachments are on the metacarpals of fingers 2, 4, and 5. Okay, metacarpals of 2, 4, and 5. One attaches to the metacarpal of the index finger. Two attaches to the metacarpal of the ring finger. And three attaches to the metacarpal of the little finger. So if we look here, right? One, three, and five. All right? Oops. From metacarpal of index ring or little, they attach then to the proximal phalanges for finger 2, 4, and 5 at the base of the proximal phalanx and dorsal digital expansion. So they go to the proximal phalanges of the fingers 2, 4, and 5 at the base of the proximal phalanx and dorsal digital expansion. One attaches to the index finger. Palmar interossei 2 attaches to the ring finger, and palmar interosseus 3 attaches to the little finger. So we can see them here, right? You can see the tendon here, 1 to the index, 4 to the ring, and 5 to the little, okay? These muscles are always on the middle finger side of the metacarpals, so the middle finger side. So you can see here where, if we look from the anatomical position, the first one is on the ulnar side of the first finger, whereas the fourth and the fifth are on the radial side of the fourth and fifth. But they all still sit, right, towards the middle finger. So I'll repeat. The muscles are always on the middle finger side of the metacarpals and phalanges. Therefore, this muscle pulls the finger to which it's attached towards the little finger, adduction. Okay? It's an adductor. Due to their attachments on the dorsal digital expansion, of course, which crosses the proximal and distal IP joints, these muscles extend the middle phalanx at the pip and the distal phalanx at the dip. So it does adduction in its associated metacarpals, but it also is an extensor because of its attachment to the DDE. Again, get that in your head. Every time you see the DDE, it's an extensor, even though it may have other actions as abduction, adduction, or flexion, right? Okay, so there it is. Remember I told you I had it somewhere? So you can buy these, and fingers can go in, and you can use them to strengthen any kinds of movements in the hands as far as that goes. So you can see that to stretch these would be the therapist abducting the fingers to stretch these muscles. Okay, so that was palmar interossei. Now we have dorsal interossei. So where will they be? Palmar would be on the palmar side, and dorsal would be on the dorsal side. So they arise from the metacarpals of fingers 1 through 5, arising from the adjacent side of two metacarpals. So we can see here how they kind of fill in. They come from, my battery must be getting low here. There we go. They come from both of them on either side. So I'll repeat. They arise from the metacarpals of fingers 1 through 5, arising from the adjacent sides of two metacarpals. So they find attachment on two metacarpals, all of them. Okay? One attaches onto the metacarpals of the thumb and the index finger. So think about that, thumb and the index finger, the metacarpals. Two arises from the metacarpals of the index and middle finger. Three arises from the metacarpals of the middle and ring finger. And four attaches onto the metacarpals of the ring and the little fingers. So there is no medial one on the medial aspect of the fifth. Between one and two, between two and three, between three and four, and between four and five. Okay? They all go to the base of the proximal phalanx and the dorsal digital expansion. So one attaches on the lateral side of the index. Two attaches onto the lateral side of the middle. Three attaches onto the medial side of the middle. And four attaches on the medial side of the ring. And you can see them here, right? So one, lateral side of the here. Two, lateral side here. Three, medial. Four, medial. Okay? Okay, let's try this and get this finished yet again. All right, so remember that we said, you know, all to the lateral side of the first of index and middle, and to the medial side of middle and ring. Okay, that's where it attaches to, and they all have attachments on both metacarpals of those particular ones, right? So they spread out and attach to two metacarpals. So they're always on the side of the metacarpals and phalanges that face away from the axis of abduction, adduction. In other words, they're always to the center of the middle finger. The first and second dorsal interosseous manus cross the MCP joints of the index and middle fingers laterally. So the first abducts the index finger, the second radially abducts the middle finger, both at the MCP. So it does this, the first does this, the second does that, right? The first does that. The third ulnar abducts the middle finger and the fourth abducts the ring finger. This muscle crosses the MCP anteriorly, which results in flexion at the proximal phalanx of the index, middle, and ring fingers. Okay? So flexion at the metacarpal phalangeal joints of the index, middle, and ring fingers, not the fifth. They attach onto the dorsal digital expansion, which of course results in extension of the middle phalanx at the PIP joints of the index, middle, and ring fingers. Again, anytime you see it, that's what it does. Innervation is ulnar nerve deep branch C8T1. And again, you can do them individually by moving through each finger in terms of your stretch, and strengthening, of course, can be one of these little web things that you can purchase. Always remember the dorsal's AB duct and the palmar's AD duct. So we always call them pad and dab. It's kind of a way to remember them, how they both do what they do, right? It's just a way to remember. Palmaris brevis, I threw it in here. Remember I said if you don't have a palmaris longus, you likely have a palmaris brevis? We all did the little test, right, to see if you had one. So no different than palmaris longus. Some people have this, some people don't, okay? It arises from the flexor retinaculum and the palmar aponeurosis to the dermis of the ulnar border of the hand. Because it attaches from medial to lateral in the hand, it pulls the dermis of the ulnar side of the hand laterally towards the center of the palm. In other words, it does help contribute to a stronger grip when we have something in our hand and we're gripping. It's ulnar nerve C8T1. You can kind of see it here. This, of course, would be palmaris longus, this tendon here. And you can see it here as well in green. Have a lovely reading week.